Hello, I'm your host, Grayson Brulte. Welcome to another episode of SAE Tomorrow Today, a show about emerging technology and trends in mobility with leaders and innovators who make it all happen. On today's episode, we're absolutely honored to be joined by Mark Kermisch, Chief Digital Information Officer, CNH. On today's episode, Mark and I discuss the economic efficiencies that are being unlocked on farms because of autonomy, automation, and precision technology. We hope you enjoy this episode. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here, Grayson. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here because autonomy will play a large role in the future of ag. It's emerging. It's going to have a positive impact on farmers around the globe. To kick things off, Mark, how is CNH approaching automation and autonomy?
You know, I'm really glad you said the word automation because that is the foundation of what is going to be autonomy. We can run tractors today completely autonomous, but unless they're controlling the implement, they actually have no value to the farmer. And so what's interesting is autonomy in ag is really about the system. It's your tillage system, your planting system, your crop protection system, or your harvesting system. In some cases, that's a single tractor and an implement. In some cases, like a self-propelled sprayer, it's a complete controlled system and a specialty vehicle. In harvesting, it's a factory on wheels with another tractor collecting and running right beside it. So now you have multi vehicles that have to kind of have connectivity. And so we really are looking at how we start with automation, which we actually have decades of experience in, and then overlay the autonomy on top of that to make it an operatorless experience for the farmer.
You highlight something very valuable. Without the automation, you don't have the tillage, you don't have the planting, you don't have the harvesting. I'm not a farmer, but what's the value if you don't have that as part of the solution?
The value is zero, to be honest with you, right? Without the automation, there's no reason to do the autonomy. Because if you think about it, back in the 80s, you started to have guidance come in and then auto steering come in. And so farmers, you literally back then, farmers would be like, why do I need auto steering? I can steer this thing. And then they all of a sudden they experience it like, okay, this 18-hour day becomes manageable now because I'm not constantly having to think about steering. And so then it came down to, well, what can you do for me next? I have complex settings across all of these implements, and most of them are manual, right? So then you're getting out of the tractor to go do your adjustments. And over time, we've laid on the electronics and hydraulics to allow that to be managed through a computer screen in the cab. As we've built that automation in, we've already started building edge-based artificial intelligence to help control and make recommendations. And as you lay the autonomy on top of that, you create a closed system that essentially allows you to replace the brains of the operator, not just the gas and the pedal of the human, right? And that's where we see the value. And we're looking at mundane jobs. And there's two really mundane jobs that the farmer probably would prefer not to do every day. That is tillage, where I'm literally just prepping my earth for putting the seed in. It's like taping in your house when you're getting ready to paint. Like, it's no fun to tape. You'd rather be painting. And crop spraying. Right. It's important to do the crop spraying. It's important to make sure you're not damaging your crop. But again, it's a mundane thing that you do sometimes 2, 3, or 4 times a season. And if you've got a 10,000 acre farm, that's a lot of glass time.
Farmer John, for example, he wants to run tillage. And he's going to run it fully automated, fully autonomous. Does he control that from an app, or how does that process start? Or does he go to the tractor and hit a button and say, OK, tractor, please do the tillage?
So, you know, when we kind of think about the levels of autonomy, right, you kind of have semi-autonomy, which is what we're getting to, versus full autonomy. Full autonomy would allow us to run across the road without an operator. So semi-autonomy means I still got to bring the tractor to the field, right? Once the tractor's in the field, then all I have to do is push a button on my mobile phone to get it up and running. I do all my planning in that mobile phone or in our web-based applications. And primarily what I'm doing in that planning is I'm making sure I've got my field boundaries, and then I'm actually laying over the path that I want the vehicle to run. And the two biggest challenges there are going to be how you turn in the field, because the physics of turning a 20-ton tractor with a, you know, 40-foot wide tillage has got a lot of different geometry and math that you got to figure out. And then the second piece is if I have a odd-shaped field, which is often the case, is how do I get into those edge cases? Which might be meaning making multiple paths. It might be lifting up the implement and having it back into that corner, lowering it down and running it. And so those edge cases are a lot of what we're working on today, along with things like, especially in tillage, is what happens when I hit a rock? How do I know it's a rock? Did it damage the implement? Do I need to stop and unplug the implement? Dirt can be muddy, or wet, and that can clog the tillage implement. I got to clear that out. And how do I alert the farmer to that? And so even with the autonomy, there are certain aspects that we're probably still going to have manual intervention on, depending on the conditions of the soil they're running in.
How much data are these autonomous tractors gathering, and what impact is it having on the farming operations?
Yeah, so my non-autonomous tractors today can pull a terabyte of data off of them, right? So then you layer that on with autonomy, it starts to kind of go up exponentially. And in autonomy, we're running all of that camera data through, and we're capturing that data. Some of it will pull off, some of it will throw away, right? So the things that we're mainly interested in is, like, if it detects an object and doesn't know what to do with it, we'll capture that data, pull it into our model, educate the model, and then publish it back out. So a lot of that will throw away. But what we're not going to throw away is any of the agronomic data that we collect around the job to be done, the quality of that job that was done, and any data that we've collected through. So today we don't do soil sampling through tillage, but in the future we could, where we could do, you know, every acre, you could take a sample of soil, run it in real time, and add that to their data set. It gets a bit more interesting in planting, where we do capture seed depth, seed spacing, any fertilizer that was put in during that seed. And so they kind of put that in as their core input, because that's what starts their revenue cycle, is what did I put in the ground? What did it cost me? Which includes the labor, the gas, the depreciation of the machine, and the cost of the seed. And then from there, they're monitoring that through the season until harvest, where they come back and say, what was my yield? What's my price lock in? What's my profit?
It seems that it's unlocking massive efficiencies that were unavailable before they had access to the data.
It is. And I think if you ask the farmer, their biggest challenge is honestly looking at how do they actually manage all that data and how do they make smart decisions? So a lot of times they're working with their agronomist, and the agronomist and the farmer are sitting down together evaluating the data and determining what the next plan is. And so the winter time is really spent looking at last year's yields, trying to forecast what they think the weather conditions are going to be this coming year, and then adjusting what they think they can plant to determine how they're going to maximize the yield again. Once the plant starts to emerge and they start to see what's the weeds coming into the field, is the weather holding up like we anticipated? Do we have access to irrigation like we need? They'll make adjustments, and that'll end up with the herbicide, pesticide, or fertilizer they're putting into the crop over the growing season. And then at the end, it's, you know, at what point do I harvest and how fast can I get it out of the ground? And then during harvest, we have yield monitors on our combines that start to look at the grain quality or the bean quality, and then be able to help calculate that yield for them on the fly. So they know as they're loading their combines up and unloading them into the trucks, what their anticipated profit could be.
They can already start to model from an economic standpoint. I'm gonna put my fun hat on, my Wall Street hat. Are they using that to do any sort of hedging techniques because they're getting that data?
They absolutely are. It's not an aspect of the life cycle that we play in specifically, but they are taking the data and the learnings and the insights when they're buying not only their crop insurance, but when they're locking in on their commodity price. And, you know, if they are, you know, doing puts and calls against that commodity to hedge. But the one thing I've learned is you have an extremely sophisticated business owner and a farmer. Right? Because they play the markets, they play insurance, they understand depreciation, they understand subsidies, they understand tax breaks. And like any small business, your ultimate goal in some respects is to ensure that you're break even, right? Which is all of my expenses I can write off in my taxes, and my revenue is covering my expenses, and my living costs are nominal, and on I go.
Is any of that data licensed to the Chicago Merc, where a lot of these commodity futures are traded? Are they, is any revenue streams coming out like that?
So it's a good question. You know, my early days was building commodity trading software, believe it or not, which eventually sold to DTN.
All right.
A lot of that is coming through either, you know, government or input companies, not directly per se from the farmer, right? So there, you know, the USDA actually has surveyors out there kind of surveying crop health. A lot of financial institution now, their analysts are out there talking to farmers and understanding how the growing season's going. They know when there's a drought, they know when commodity prices are low, and all of that gets baked into the ultimate commodity price. Yeah. So even geopolitics, you know, if countries aren't buying for whatever reason, grain supply gets cut because of conflicts in the world, shipping lanes get disturbed, right? All of that gets factored in. our data sets certainly have an aspect to that, but probably more on the hedging side of the farmer than to the market.
That's fascinating. We saw what happened in the Ukraine with the grain. Now we're seeing what's happening with the cocoa and the chocolate, the price of chocolate going up.
It's kind of crazy, right?
Commodities are a fascinating subset of markets. That's a whole other podcast for another day. Commodity roll with you here. Before we go down commodity row, because I probably get back to it at some point, from a tech standpoint, what separates your tech stack, the CNH tech stack, from your competitors? Because what you're describing to me, you're gathering all this data, you have hedging abilities, you have the ability to license it maybe to a commodity hedge fund. There's a lot of opportunities on top of the efficiencies that you're unlocking for farmers.
Yeah, I think there's three or four things that I would call out. First and foremost starts with data and who owns the data. So in our perspective, the farmer owns their data 100%, period. We ask, as a part of our EULA, for the right to use that data in product development to make the product better. We do not sell, market, or distribute that data. If we ever felt there was the right opportunity, we'd want to include the farmer in the economics of that. So if Chicago Merck came and said, hey, could you give us all your farmer data? And I said, great, you're going to pay me $1 billion for that. I want to go to every farmer and say, hey, here's a check for your share of your data. Oh, by the way, you don't want to sell yours? Fine. We won't sell it. The last thing I want to do, though, is be an arbiter of revenue there without the farmer participating. The second piece for us, I would say, is the openness of our systems, right? This is, our cloud-based systems where all that data flows into. We have an open API architecture that they can add data to it. So if they have, data coming in from other sources, if they want to export our data to, their input or their agronomist data platforms, they can do that as well. And so the intent is to make it as rich and as easy to use as possible from that aspect of it. Third is, we're vertically integrating our tech stack, right? So with the acquisition of Raven, with Hemisphere, and with Augmenta, so I've got the best crop protection system in the marketplace, we believe, with Raven's technology. I've got the GNSS and the satellite corrections capability with Hemisphere, which allows me to ensure that tractor is within the centimeter they need to be in. And Augmenta is what's enabling us to start to see the crop health to then be able to act with the crop protection inputs on the field. So it helps me reduce the amount of chemical or spraying that I'm doing to just the areas or plants that need it. And then we're vertically integrating that. So we own 100% of that tech stack, and we can be super flexible and ultimately super fast as we release feature sets. And the last piece is ease of use. So if you sat down in any tractor today and you compared it to a green screen of the 80s for an ERP system, they kind of feel the same, right? And so we're on a journey, and you'll start to see this summer with the launch of a new mobile app in our web platform, of really trying to shift and modernize the workflow of how the farmer does their work and making it super intuitive and easy to use, which ultimately reduces stress of the farmer and how they're operating their equipment.
Where does the love and respect that you've demonstrated during this podcast for farmers come from? Is it cultural? Where does it come from?
So I've been in a lot of different industries. I've been in financial services. I've been in retail. I've been in core manufacturing, utilities, high-tech startups. But there's something about a customer that you serve that is feeding the world, where they're not doing this per se to get rich. They're doing this because it's a lifestyle, and it allows them to get up every day knowing they're doing something good in the world and making an impact. And it's a super easy customer to get behind, right? And they work so darn hard and have so many things that are not controllable by them. Like, if I can give them a product that makes their life easier and helps them guarantee their profitability and sustainability of the farm, then it's an easy thing for me to get behind. And when you sit down and you talk to these guys, my very first couple months on this job, I was talking with a farmer in Southern Illinois. And being a tech guy, like, I can make 1,000 mistakes a minute, right? And I can easily correct it. And he made a statement, and I've heard it multiple times now, as he's like, Mark, if I'm lucky, I have a 30-year career. I plant once a year. If I screw up my planting, that's 1/30th of my career out the door. I can't recover it, right? And for those that grew up in tech and this concept of move fast and break things, it's really hard to do that when the farmer can't afford you to break something for him. And so that's where my care and passion for the farmer really comes out. It's such an altruistic lifestyle. It's hard. It's a part of our history as a country. It's easy to get behind as a product guy.
It's a hard lifestyle. It's a meaningful lifestyle, and farmers are proud. They put yummy food in our tummies.
Mm-hmm.
You're developing a lot of cutting edge technologies that are helping farmers do their job and do their job with precision. One of those is CNH's soil by soil precision technology. Where does that fit into, let's call it, the CNH tech stack?
Yeah, so if we talked about automation in the beginning, right? So our kind of soil command capabilities really are an aspect of that automation, right? And when you think about that, as you're tilling your land and you want to make sure you've got smooth, even land that's at the right level of compaction such that you can plant simply, and you're ensuring that you're creating the seed bed at the depth that you need to maximize the growth of that seed. And ultimately, as you think about a farm with 5,000 acres, 1,000 acres, or 500, the contours of the land, the way the sun hits that land and how dry or moist that soil is going to be, the way the water comes across that land, that all goes into how they may set the depth of that seed bed. And Soil Command really allows us to manage that and automate it in a way where, you know, 60, 70 years ago, they just set it and forget it and everything was uniform. And some parts of the field grew better than other parts and they couldn't figure out how to adjust for that. Now they can. And, you know, the goal is profitability per acre. It's not just the yield I can get out of it, but how efficient is it for me to plant, grow, and harvest that acre? You might have a high yield acre, but the cost to manage it was actually super high as well. And so the profitability is lower. So Soil Command is one of those tools the farmer can use to try to ensure they're maximizing the profitability and minimizing the cost.
Was there a trend or a historical moment in time when data started playing a large role in farming? When did it start to work its way into farms?
I would say probably, from my perspective, data has always been a big chunk of it. I think it's the question is it used to be once a year, right? My yield data at the end of the year, and I look back over the winter on like, what were all the things that impacted my yield? And it was more intuition, right? I think as we started to introduce automation in the 90s and really started introducing it in the early 2000s, all of a sudden that became multiple times during the season that data became available and they could actually make decisions that could impact the growing season in season. Which started to allow them to drive their yields up and ultimately manage their costs. And I think, you know, in the last 5 years is when you've seen an explosion of data, maybe seven if I think harder about it. And it's just going to get faster. It's going to come at them faster and it's going to get richer over the next decade.
Is it the 90s when CNH first started investing in autonomy and automation, or were you ahead of the curve on that?
So I would say, you know, it was really the 80s when we introduced guidance and steering. And I would argue we were probably slightly ahead of the curve. I think we were one of the first to introduce that, if I remember. And I think we kept pace pretty well with the advances of technology through the 90s into the very early 2000s. And then I think for a while there, we lost our way on the advancements of what I'll call software on the vehicle. And like a lot of companies, especially in the industrial vehicle space, you relied on third-party partners to create a lot of your software. And so you're in part wedded to their roadmaps. And so we were a little bit late to the game, recognizing that we had to vertically integrate and really create the capability to write software to ensure our farmers had the best capabilities to farm at. And so, you know, over the last 3 years, that's been part of my job, which is really identifying how do we create a culture of technology, software engineering, and hardware engineering? How do we start to vertically integrate so we can move at the pace the market needs us to deliver solutions that are world-class for our farmers?
Are you looking to integrate generative AI into the applications today?
One of my favorite topics. Here's what's super exciting. We just launched our first generative AI application to our dealers. And so if you get a manual for a tractor, it's hundreds of pages. And service technicians are super hard to acquire and retain in our market. And so we were working with some of our dealers, and one of them's like, hey, you know, it'd be really great if my guys could use their mobile phone to ask questions to find the answers they need to fix something. And with generative AI, it actually allows us to truly do that and in a very cost efficient. So we literally had a discussion call in October last year. We had a pilot in front of that same dealer by November. We started to scale that pilot out in January. We added 25 more dealerships to it. And we just rolled it out about a week and a half ago to our dealers to start to use and help us build upon. And so now I can open up a mobile app. I can say, hey, you know, how do I change the oil filter in the latest CR11 combine from New Holland? How do I adjust the header on that combine? You know, how do I ensure that I'm getting the right readings for my yield monitor? And the questions come back and it goes straight to where the manual is and shows them the page, shows them the diagrams, the diagnostics, the part numbers they might need to fix something. And it's literally cutting minutes to sometimes hours out of their day. And it also, you know, for the one or two tenured service techs in the dealership, they're no longer being bombarded with questions. And so they get a little bit of time back too, and maybe they're a little bit less grumpy.
Do you feel that the consumerization of generative AI is helping accelerating this, where consumers are comfortable asking a device or asking a computer a question and getting an answer?
That's a good question, because if you jumped out into the farm, I don't think it's hit those farmers quite yet. I still feel some of the consumerization of tech, they're not on Microsoft Teams every day, right? They're not seeing it coming through an enterprise version of Microsoft Copilot. So what I find is some of the farmers have heard about it. They haven't figured out how to play with it because they just haven't spent the time. Yeah, certainly the dealerships are a bit more attuned to it because they're starting to use it. But do I think it's going to help? Sure, just like the mobile phone does, right? When I talk about connectivity with our farmers, I usually say, you wouldn't walk out of your house without your mobile phone. Why are you letting your tractor not be connected?
It's a valid point. Your phone's your wallet now. Soon it's going to be your driver's license. It's in some cases, it's the key to your car. And
right.
Other cases, it's the key to your life. And you're like, oh, well, what the heck's going on here?
Yes.
What is the great unlock for farmers and farming for generative AI? Is there a killer app that's coming? Is there something that CNH is developing that you have your thumb on that's going to really push the envelope forward?
Yeah, I think to me, one of the killer apps, and we're starting to experiment with this with generative AI, is really making it easier for the farmer to get insights out of the data, right? So, you know, this is right now still a vision. It's not a reality for me yet, but I'd really like to be able to have the farmer ask a generative AI prompt, you know, build me my spring planting plan, factor in the last 5 averages of my yields, factor in the last 20 years of Farmer's Almanac weather, right? Take a look at my neighbors and tell me what their yields were. Here's my seed company. Here's the fertilizer I've used. Here's my equipment and how long it took me to plant. And then ideally it produces a plan back, right? And as you probably know, the more specific they can be with that prompt, the better off the response is going to be. And all of a sudden, this whole need to build fancy dashboards and graphics and all that stuff starts to go away, because I can, with natural language, start to ask questions of my data and get responses back. And that, to me, becomes the killer app. You know, even down to, you know, hey, could you take a look at the last 100 hours of my tractor running, who the operator was, and tell me who ran it most efficiently and got the most gas mileage per acre. Right. And then I want to understand their behaviors. I want to go to all my other operators and say, do what Joe does. Right. You're going to max out at 2,500 RPMs. And that's it. Because I maximize my gas at that level.
Think about the economic efficiencies that could unlock. That could be vast. Have a very positive impact on farmers around the world. Will CNH develop that in-house and then license it or sell it as a service to farmers? Or how do you see that killer app being developed?
Yeah, so I think we are already developing that within our tool chain. Today, we view that as a value-added service for being in our ecosystem of equipment. You know, we're still learning with our customers and what they're willing to allow us to monetize as it relates to the digital capabilities that we give them. And, you know, right or wrong, part of our industry set the value at zero for some of those digital tools as a way to get locked into the ecosystem of the precision technology and the equipment I provide. And so we're operating a little bit as the base. I think as the value increases and the ease of use continues to improve, we'll start to find ways to monetize that where the farmer's comfortable saying, yeah, I'll pay for that. That's valuable enough for me.
Especially the farmer could have a clear payback and they can understand it. It's the modeling. Oh, okay. I pay this back in one harvest. Oh, okay. This is pretty dramatic there. How vast is CNH's tech portfolio? You have the automation autonomy, you have the generative AI, you have the precision tech. Is there, what else is a part of your tech portfolio?
So I think other aspects of our tech portfolio, we're starting to take a look at robotics as a whole. And robotics to me is two parts. You know, when we talked about automation and autonomy, I'm ultimately creating one big robot. When I think about robotics, it starts to talk about things that are actuation in nature that can actually pick things, move dirt, dig dirt, whatever. So specialty is an area where that's super important. It's one crop that has the highest labor input cost because you're often hand picking this fruit. And a lot of our specialty farmers are struggling with labor in general. And so there's a lot of interest. And this is where the ag tech market and the startup space has been really interesting to watch and monitor, because they've been focusing highly there. Because it's one of the few areas of farming where you have an extremely highly valued crop and farmers are willing to invest in it because they see the immediate labor payoff by automating it. We talked about data and analytics. That'll continue to be kind of top of mind. And then, yeah, I'd call computer vision is probably the other aspect we haven't spent a lot of time talking about. And that's ultimately what enables crop health or autonomy as a whole.
Is computer vision, is that what's powering your precision tech business? Is that based on computer vision?
That is. And so we look at computer vision as probably three components. We're anchored very much to serial cameras, right? So you're getting a true image. And you'll be able to apply different technologies to determine if you can see the chlorophyll or content of the plant. We do use LiDAR and radar. They both have value depending on the mission. The biggest challenge with cameras is they get dusty, right? And LiDAR can kind of see through that and there's not a concern, but you have cost challenges with LiDAR. And so we'll have some combination of either camera radar or camera LiDAR depending on the use case.
Do you have a spray technology for precision, since weed management on farms is such a critical task of the farming operation?
We do. So Raven Industries, who we acquired back at the end of 2022, and is what I would say is the preeminent crop spraying technology out there. So they have a system that allows them not only to see out ahead of the vehicle to help determine exactly what's in front of it. We can spray by section, and we can also have essentially nozzle control, so what's called variable rate spraying. And we can spray essentially down to roughly is a really tight 50 centimeter block, right? And we're doing that at 20 plus miles an hour. And so it's got one of the tightest spray radiuses in the market today that allows you to be very efficient and exact on what you want to do with that.
Is that tie into, going back to earlier in the conversation, tie into the automated part of the conversation where the tractor's driving autonomously, the spray is being automated and operating autonomously?
That's exactly right. And so like with the Augmenta system that we bought, one of the things that Augmenta did a really nice job of, they can detect the chlorophyll of the plant and help determine the amount that needs to be sprayed and where it needs to be sprayed. And so there's two aspects in spraying that are emerging. One is called green on brown. So you have an early emergent crop where I can still see the brown dirt around it, and I can identify the crop and assume everything else around that crop needs to be sprayed as a weed or some other nefarious plant that you don't want in your crop. As the crop grows, you end up having green on green. So you now have a challenge with color. And so the next phase is, how do we start to identify the shape of a plant versus the shape of the crop when I don't have that contrast? And so I can still continue to focus on spraying the plant. And it gets interesting because I got to make sure that where I'm spraying, I'm not having anything drip over to the plant that you don't want on the crop. And so again, doing that at pace. And so today in green on green spraying, your speed drops by 50%. And so you might be reducing, the amount of content you're putting on the fields and saving money there, it might be offset by extra labor cost. So getting to autonomy at least flattens that labor cost and takes it out of the picture. So if I'm running at 10 miles an hour or I'm running at 20 miles an hour, it doesn't matter.
Before a farmer can introduce autonomy and precision tech, do they have to prep the farm, update the farm? Do they have to do anything prior to that?
Not necessarily on the ground, right? Yeah, where the prep comes in a couple of places, we need to make sure they have connectivity. Right. And there's kind of three ways for connectivity today. The two most common are going to be cellular based and they're going to be Wi-Fi based. And that kind of creates a mesh network. Right. And we can manage either. The next generation is really about satellite connectivity. And so we've been working with a handful of partners to figure out what's the best satellite partner. And in areas like Southeast United States or wine country where you're moving up and down hills, the Mato Grosso region in Northwest Brazil, which is really feels like you're in Mars because it's red dirt and it's flat. There's nothing around. There's not good cellular coverage. So we're starting to rely more and more on satellite. And that's going to be a necessity for autonomy, right? You need those vehicles to be connected. And then the second piece is really just setting up your fields and your boundaries, right? And most of that's going to be done within your digital platforms. And most of that's going to start with an AI overlay. So we're going to take a look at a satellite image, right? We're going to determine where we think the boundaries are, and we're going to recommend that to farmer. So then the farmer, all they have to do is kind of adjust it based off of what they actually know. In other cases, they could go out and they could drive the field with the tractor and set the boundaries manually if they want to be more exact, depending on some of those obstacles, fence lines or oddities to the shape of the field.
That's fascinating. From the data perspective, is it just real-time data from the connectivity, or is it offloading all that data in real-time, or does when the tractor goes back into the farmhouse, is that where the big data dump happens, or how does that look from a data transfer perspective?
Yeah, so it's continuous. Now, for us, all of the compute and decisions will happen on the edge on the tractor, right? Because you don't want to have any latency concerns of real-time decision-making. The value of the data coming off the tractor to the digital platform is for the after-mission analysis. And then we'll also take a look at that data and determine what aspects of that can be used to tune the models on the tractor. And then we'll push those models to the tractor when they've been hardened and are ready to go. And most of that's going to be around the efficacy of the autonomy. Right. In farming, you can sometimes have weird shadows that pop up where the tractor stops and goes, I don't know what this is. Right. And so, our goal would be, ideally you'd have maybe one error per 5,000 acres. In reality, as this technology is emerging, we're probably seeing one error per 100 acres is what our goal is to get to, which means an alert has to be cleared by the farmer. Right. And the good news is if that happens, the farmer can pull up their mobile app and they could take a look at the image that the tractor is seeing. And they might be able to manually clear that. In certain cases, if we know, for example, there's a human there, they may have to physically go out and see what's going on. But they could open up any of those cameras, they could physically see what's around it, right? So they have visibility if they happen to be back at the kitchen table or on the road running errands during the day.
The economic impact that this is going to have on farms and farmers is going to be astronomical. I don't have the data to give you a number, I'm not sure you do, but it's going to really be astronomically positive. So you're doing the compute on the edge. How do you blend it from an efficiency and performance standpoint? Because the tractors have to go, sometimes 16 hours? They have to go for long periods of time. And as we all know, some sort of the compute takes a lot of power. How are you balancing that?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is a lot of these tractors have, 300, 400, 500 horsepower engines, right? And so our high voltage and electronic architecture are super important to ensure that the there's enough energy that can power the batteries on the vehicle that are then powering the electronics on that vehicle. So, our limiter is how big is the gas tank for the most part. But we're not doing like GPU level NVIDIA like processing on the fly because you're loading preloaded models. Your models are doing, basic object detection. Most of what they're going to see is not going to have any compute necessary until it sees an oddity that says, what is this? And a little bit of processing speed goes up. And so it's actually a lot lower than you think. As we, probably our biggest challenge is when we have what we call see and act. And so if I've got a computer vision on the front of the tractor and I'm then changing how the implement or the spraying is happening behind the tractor, at most, that's 120 milliseconds of time I have to process. Ideally, we're trying to get that down to 50 milliseconds or less to be able to take action at speed. And that's partly why a sprayer that we talked about earlier has to slow down, because you need to have a little bit of gap between what's being seen so you can tell the mechanics behind on the sprayer to change what it's going to do based off of that. Again, the compute power is not super high, but time becomes a factor more so than anything else.
So you want to eliminate all latency at some point, depending on networks and compute power?
There is 100% focused on that. And there's some interesting things like, drones have entered farming quite aggressively, and drones are being used primarily for crop health. And that data goes back to their agronomist. But we're starting to see some startups out there that are starting to look at plant health and being able to then load that into a vehicle. And could that then all of a sudden improve how the vehicle is running its mission over the land? So take a sprayer, could I fly a drone out ahead so I can increase that time to act, right? Can I go from 120 milliseconds and say, geez, now I get 60 seconds because the drone's flying out? Yeah, and so we're testing some of that, determining if the efficacy of the vision of the drone at height can actually process from one device to another device. Some of the limiting there is battery power, right? So a drone might be able to get 100 acres before it needs to go back and recharge. And how many drones do I need to kind of manage a ongoing operation? Because you don't want to be starting and stopping that all the time.
Technology in the farm and the ag is only going to continue. It's only going to continue to advance. It's only going to benefit farmers and the commodities markets in the end. Mark, in your opinion, what is the future of CNH?
That's a great question. I think we are what I'm going to call a software-defined vehicle company, right? Where software is driving the efficacy and value of our product, where the last 200 years per se has been a horsepower game. And so you think about from like an EV perspective in automotive, it's now about, how autonomous can your car be, right? Not worrying so much about torque and horsepower, because that's all of a sudden become immediate. And there's no longer a horsepower race because you get immediate torque coming out of an EV motor. I think it's going to be a bit of time before we go all electric, if ever, just because of some of the size of the vehicles and the duration of the jobs they have to run. But I do think there is a peak at some point where horsepower starts to detract. Vehicles may shrink in size because I can network those vehicles and use software to actually have autonomous operations. And so it could truly change the way farming works in that regard. And with that, I think there's an open question. Do we become a services company instead of a whole goods sale company? I don't have a good answer for that, but it's certainly top of mind depending on how the industry goes. But no different than how we, use landscaping services or yard services. Some farmers will choose to just run a robotic lawnmower. Some may choose to hire somebody to run their lawnmower. Some may choose to run it themselves. So today in farming, the farmer can choose to hire somebody or they can run it themselves. We're getting to a point where they can soon to be choosing something to run on its own.
I like this. CNH, a software-defined vehicle company. You're onto something, Mark. You're truly on something. I can't wait to see what the future holds for CNH. As we look to wrap up this conversation for today, what would you like our listeners to take away with them today?
I think for me, farming is rich with technology opportunities and really complex technical problems. You have a very sophisticated customer we're serving and a tremendous problem we're trying to solve. We tried to feed 8 billion people in the world and growing, with changes in our growing cycles due to weather patterns that are getting more aggressive. And I'd love to see more people come into our field thinking about how they want to solve these unbelievable technological problems that are out there for our society.
Farming is rich with technology solutions. Today is tomorrow. Tomorrow is today. The future is CNH. Mark, thank you so much for coming on SAE Tomorrow Today.
Absolutely, Grayson. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to SAE Tomorrow Today. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to hear more, please kindly rate, review, and let us know what topics you'd like for us to explore next. Be sure to join us next week to hear about Balanced Engineering's approach to maximizing productivity in agriculture.
SAE International makes no representations as to the accuracy of the information presented in this podcast. The information and opinions are for general information only. SAE International does not endorse, approve, recommend, or certify any information, product, process, service, or organization presented or mentioned in this podcast.